Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Insights for the Functional Foodie on the Coach and Fire Network. I'm Jane, the Functional Foodie, and the show you're listening to is all about great food and how to use it for achieving and maintaining vibrant health. Today, I'm really excited to be taking a slightly different look at the world of health by concentrating on the health of our young people and our children. I'll be talking to a lady called Jenny Marshall, who's in the UK and who has starting a membership site for teens. I think it's between the ages of 14 and 20, but obviously we can go into all the details later, called What Is and Why Is That, which has got a massive focus on the holistic health of the next generation, their health and their well-being, so mental, physical and emotional. It's going to be a really, really enlightening hour talking to her. We'll also have a functional foodie focus today. And of course, a recipe at the end to get you into the kitchen. Both of those things will have a slant that's going to be good for children. So to call in and ask a question at any point on the show today to speak to me or Jenny, call from the States 646-716-7979. And if you'd like to find out more about functional food and my work as a functional foodie, as a therapist and a health advocate, you can visit my hub site at www.functional-foodie.com or trinityholistics.co.uk, and you'll find recipes, targeted health courses, membership options, and for consultations and plans and resources. So let's get on now and look at today's foodie focus. And of course, with a guest who's all about the health of our teens and our young people, I had to do a foodie focus on getting your kids to eat healthier. I mean, how many people out there have not torn their hair out at one point or another getting into battles with their children over food, and especially over eating healthy food, the greens, the fruits? That's not healthy. This is healthy. Eat healthier. We all do it. So what tips can I give you on how to promote a healthier lifestyle to the children? Especially all the advertising that they get and the peer pressure, it's really hard for them and it's really hard for parents. So my tips would be, one of the best things you can do is get them involved in meal planning, in shopping and in food preparation, and actually make it a bit of a ritual that at the weekend you set some time aside to plan what meals you're going to have for the next week, because we're all busy. We work, they're at school. One of the biggest problems I hear from parents all the time, or from people generally, is I don't have time because I work and you've got the kids and they want this and they want that. Well, try and make it a family activity. Put some time to prepare a meal plan, get their input, ask them what they want to eat. Maybe find healthier versions of things. Say, look, you want pizza? Let's make our own pizza bases and put them in the freezer. Let's try and find healthier ways of doing pizza. And then go and shop for the ingredients and spend some time prepping ahead for the week. And children generally love that. I found that I've actually worked with some families and their children to try and bring this into focus, because sometimes parents and children can get into such battles that no one's really getting anywhere, and it just becomes all about the power struggle rather than the end goal. So bringing somebody else in as a kind of coach for the family can help the children to focus on somebody else and actually move things forward. If you relate food to health and to them achieving to things, that can also help them see it as a conscious choice, that they're not just eating their greens because mum says so. What they're doing is thinking, well, I'm going to make sure that I eat some vegetables because it's going to help me do better sport, or it's going to help me to get better results or help me to concentrate more. So if you can actually give them the health benefits of what they're doing and what they're eating, that can also help them to make that conscious choice. Education about food as nourishment and developing their bodies and brains is really useful in this respect, of course, because this is what it's all about. It's about educating our young people in why they should be eating more healthily and what healthy eating really looks like. Because some foods look healthy in the packaging, but they're packaged and processed and they're not healthy. And this is the big thing, is getting the message across to them that actually you need to eat food in its natural state. You need to learn to cook. You need to try and move away from all packaged food. So it's not just giving up drinking too much Coke or whatever it is, or soda or McDonald's or for junk food, whatever they like to do. It's also about thinking, well, that might be a packaged smoothie. How healthy actually is it? And maybe it's about moving away and making their own smoothies, or choosing to drink water when they're out, or maybe just a plain diluted juice. And when they're at home, they can make their own, which is a lot of fun and a lot more nutritious, of course, as well. It's important not to get into battles, I think, but remember, as a parent, you are in charge. And I think parents want to please their children. They're tired. They've had a long day. They don't want to get into battles over food. But I think it's always important as a parent to draw the line and say, look, I'm in charge. So this is what we're eating. This is what we're going to cook. This is what we're going to do. This is it. And there was always this kind of view that, you know, if you didn't eat what was in front of you, you'd be hungry. And we kind of quail at that now, I think, in modern society. But I think there's room to bring that kind of thing back and say, well, look, this is what we're going to be eating. And when it comes to that day, this is what we're eating. If you don't want it, fine. But I'm not cooking anything else. Because I know of women who are, and even men sometimes, who are literally cooking 3 or 4 different meals every evening, and cannot be healthy for the family, let alone for everybody in it. So just remember that you're in charge. And one of the best ways to be in charge is to set an example and to try and say, well, look, I'm not going to, you know, want you to make better choices, and I'm going to give you the choice to make, but at the end of the day, I'm the parent. And that's something I've found, certainly in my years in the classroom as well, that children generally do like boundaries. They like to know that they have a safe environment, and part of providing that is saying, well, look, I'm going to give you good healthy food, this is what you need to eat, and this is why. And they respond pretty well to that, especially if you can get them involved. So you're teaching them all about balance, really. Denial and restriction aren't healthy. There are a number of, I think, young girls of around, I don't know, early teens are absolutely the classic demographic to become vegetarian or to go into fads, because this is when, actually much earlier than this now, the media is kicking in about what people should look like, and there's the body image. And this is where, as parents, think you need to be aware too, that this might be, if you see a child, it doesn't have to be a girl either, actually, restricting their food or becoming faddy about their food, try and ask some questions and sort of find out why. Maybe there's some peer pressure going on. My niece tried to go vegetarian, and I had to say, well, that's okay if it's, there's real reasons behind it, but you know you're going to have to eat differently, replace the nutrients that you'd be getting from the animal products. So you can try it, but you're going to have to cook better. You're going to have to eat better. You can't just cut things out. And it turned out to be a peer pressure. So there's nothing wrong with it if they have real ethical reasons for doing so. But it is important for their growth and their health. So, of course, they're getting everything they need. And we know that our young people need even more nutrients than we do. So a few tips there for you to maybe go away and see if there's anything that you would like to change within your family dynamic. Many families are working really well and work fine. But I've come across many parents who say they're having daily battles with their kids over food and over health. Once they reach teenage years, that gets even more difficult. So try and get them while they're young. I'm sure Jenny's going to have plenty to say on this subject. Now, time to introduce my guest. Jenny has trained in so many different modalities. She has trained in NLP. She's trained in hypnotherapy, in EFT, which is emotional freedom technique, otherwise known as tapping. Matrix re-imprinting, Reiki, meditation and awakening programs, meta health and more. She suffered chronic fatigue, just as I did, when she was a young adult, after years of being in a traditionally academic education system. So now she's come to set up What It Is and Why Is That. And that is a way of creating a worldwide community for young people to access information on health and well-being, to make their voices heard, and to create a sense of community. So again, before we launch into the interview, if you want to call in and ask her a question, you can do on 646-716-7979. In the meantime, I'll introduce Jenny. Are you there?
Hi, yeah, yes, I'm here, Jane. Hi.
Hi. So nice little build up there about this incredible thing that you're doing, a worldwide membership site. It's pretty amazing. I've talked to you about it before at great depth, and it's a huge undertaking. It's absolutely enormous. So tell us a little bit about it before we go into finding out about you and what brought you to it. What's it going to all be about?
Oh, goodness. Yes. When you say how huge it is, it's almost like, you know, where do I begin? I think I'll begin with some of the points that you've already made. It is for 11 to 20s. And the reason for that is that in the UK, we have the education system where secondary education, the transition happens, you know, sort of age 10, 11. So we want to start covering that transition for young people and following them through their education to whether it's further education or then onto its higher education, which obviously happens at the end of the teens into 20s. We just want to offer as much support as we possibly can to every individual. As you say, it is global because obviously we are one planet. I say obviously, maybe some people don't see it that way, but the way that I look at it, we are one planet, we are one set of people, we all have co-ownership of this wonderful world that we live on. And for me, I feel there is a real lack of opportunity for young people to feel their voices heard. And so that's the main ethos of this group. So we want to mobilise teenagers across the planet to grow their voice, to give them a platform to be heard, and to grow their ownership of what they want the world to become. My personal feeling is at the minute that they're not really feeling that they're inheriting something that they want. And I believe that they have far more answers than questions. And if we open up that foundation of security for them to ask anything they like, with no consequences of any significance that they need to worry about, you know, you can literally ask us anything. We will do our best to get the answers that they're looking for, and just keep running with that. Get them to tell us how they want the site to function for them. All we can do at this point is hold that space for them and then hand it over. So that's where it starts at the minute. You can go to the site now and use the Ask Us and Tell Us buttons on there, and send in questions and your demands of us that you can help us co-create it.
Amazing, especially bringing them into actually co-creating their own space.
Absolutely.
While you're kind of curating it in some respects, aren't you? Just you've gathered all these different experts, and obviously you've asked me to be one of them, which is fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. But you've curated all these people and corralled them all, and we're all there waiting to help all these children. And how long have you spent so far putting it together?
Oh, getting to 3 years now. And it's been almost a year of gathering all of these people around me. Some of them are people that I've had in my life for at least a decade, if not longer. And I've just always known that we have that sort of resonance within us about looking after young people. And they're people that maybe I've worked with in the education system or have just known along the way. And I know that we all feel the same way about supporting young people. And more recently, I've been able to use social media and use Facebook to gather even more interest by sort of putting my profile up there and just saying, hey, guess what? This is what I want to do. Is anybody interested? And, you know, amazing support that we've had. You know, as you know, we've got about 40 people now in a closed group there that are all supportive of the project. And like you say, sort of lined up, ready with all of their expertise and willingness to support. And, you know, a satellite group of many more that aren't quite sure how they might be involved yet, because as you say, it's going to be huge and none of us really know how much of our time we're going to be giving to it. We just are all ready to give. I think that's the way to look at it, isn't it? We're all fired up and ready.
Yeah, we are indeed. It's very exciting, isn't it? But tell us more about your experiences and what inspired you to set this up.
I love that word. Children inspire me. I honestly think it is that simple. When you look at children naturally at play, It's a delight to watch that inquisitiveness, to see some light in their faces and joy behind the eyes and in the body as well, you know, if they're bouncing around or, you know, any age. I love that. And of course, they don't come into the world speaking and telling us what they want to do, but they very soon quickly learn to smile and to laugh. And that is giving and receiving joy in a nutshell, isn't it? I mean, it's just the most beautiful thing. So I do believe that we are here to just be joy, to experience joy on every level, but to be it, to fully feel it within ourselves. And so it feels like a purpose. And a mission to support children throughout their growing years into what we currently call adulthood. Whereas, you know, I don't necessarily believe there's a cutoff point where you stop being a child and you become grown up. I don't think that happens. But I want to support people to live their happiest and most fulfilled life, to keep with that inquiring, energized mind that doesn't really need to stop looking for answers. I think we just get squished, you know, certainly in the UK, the education system. You know, starting so young, age four, and, you know, we sort of stick children behind desks now, and they're very quickly told how they need to behave to learn best. And whether it suits the way their mind works or not, that's what happens. You're sitting little people at tables in a box. And that's not to say that there aren't some wonderful things happening within schools where they have a nature program and they do go outside, and there's other things that obviously happen that are generating that personal initiative. But I feel on the whole, we squish children. The education system around the world, the systems around the world globally, seem to be more interested in, you know, turning out viable adults into a workplace that then supports the rest of society without looking at their mental health and well-being or their happiness, or whether it's what they really want to do, whether it's actually something they can excel at. You know, we have things whereby a child might not be doing very well with their mathematics. And so all the focus goes on what they're not very good at to help them come up to a level for the school's standards, or, you know, because it looks better on a piece of paper. When actually, if you allow that child to explore the things that they're excelling at and then not worry so much about the things that they're not really feeling in tune with, we diversify very quickly. You know, the human brain is just, you know, the best computer there's ever going to be. It has such capacity to learn and latch on to new things. And, you know, you let a child explore through play and allow that inquisitiveness to keep coming out. And, you know, we would produce the most amazing inventors. It's all young people. If you know, you don't have to go online to find out young people now that are solving the issues that adults have created around pollution. And things like that, and homeless people, and, you know, waterproof sleeping bags and things like this that young people are very aware of and conscious of that they want to create. And I want to sponsor that. I want to foster that in young people. I want to say to them, yes, we hear you. Actually, you do have some really good answers. You know, yes, we haven't actually solved a lot of these things. We've actually created a lot of these things that you're now having to deal with. Let's actually look at what the most natural response to something might be and give you the space to go with that. You know, it's like giving somebody their head and letting them run with something. You know, it doesn't often happen in schooling. And certainly then we're creating young people to then be that same kind of model of a person in the workplace. It's, you know, you and I will both have been employees of other people at times. And, you know, it's very difficult if you have a great, bright idea to go and do something about it. You know, it's as an employee, you have very little autonomy with those kinds of things. So if we approach children with the idea that they are autonomous, you know, singular beings that, you know, working together with their excitement for the world, they can create amazing things, and let's support that. To me, that seems like a much better thing to promote, to allow that natural, you know, their inside nature to come out than to pigeonhole in boxes because that looks good on a league table.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're quite right. I mean, there are many people who are academic. I was quite academic and I was pushed very hard at school. And a lot of those skills I've given with this sort of very strict work ethic have seen me through some very, very sort of difficult times in my life. Mm-hmm. So it's about arming people with skills and resilience in other ways, because my son, being incredibly creative, had a completely opposite experience. The school, the mm-hmm. education system did not suit him at all, and his talents were not... were not really developed until he went to art college at 16. So mm-hmm. I you know, I was pushed very hard and I succeeded, but I didn't enjoy it as such. So
that, I think that's the thing. Yeah.
New ways, I think, to be found, because we've got a much more creative generation now, I think, in many respects. I don't know. It seems to me that
I do
children have become a lot
focused.
More creative.
Yes, and I think there's a lovely thing that was going around. I think it might have been on Facebook the other day about you know, don't ask a child what they want to be when they grow up. Ask them what solutions they want to find. Ask them what they want solved. Ask them what they want changed. Don't say, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, do you want to be a fireman or a nurse or what you do? All those kind of things that, you know, a lot of young children want to be an astronaut, don't they? And then that sort of disappears. But it is they would be far more open to that vitality in life that is inherent in them becoming their natural way of being always, if very early on we ask them, you know, what would you like to change? What is there out there that you'd like to see done differently? And certainly with the project, you know, what we found from the get-go talking to young people, the most things they want to change is what they perceive as fairness and injustice in the world, which will take us on to another aspect of the project, which I'm sure we can talk about a little later.
Yes. Well, just a quick reminder for anybody who wants to call in, the number is 646-716-7979. I wanted to ask how your own time as a young person impacted on your desire to change things on a global level, because, you know, we can have views about the education system. We can say, oh, well, this should change, that should change. You've put it into action in massive, massive way. So something must have really prompted that. Some really deep desire must have prompted that.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, because, you know, looking at it as a global thing, again, sometimes, yes, it does feel huge, and sometimes it doesn't, because the world is shrinking, isn't it, with the internet and travel as it is now. You can fly around the world, you know, much faster than you used to be able to travel by boat or whatever. So it feels like it's shrinking. And we're all aware of those sort of 6 degrees of separation things, whereby we all know somebody that knows somebody that knows the same person kind of thing. So in a lot of ways, it just feels like a small world. But then in terms of it being a global project and our outreach, then yes, that does feel huge, because the potential is huge. And I guess my reasoning behind why that is how it was always going to be, is that when I was a young child, I was very aware that I was lucky to have been born where I was. I was of a generation whereby, you know, we were starting to see, you know, news reporting on the television. And when I grew up, we only had, what was it, 3 channels, 4 channels? I can't, 3 channels, and then Channel 4 appeared. You know, it was very limited, wasn't it, what TV was available when we were little people.
Oh yeah.
And yet you would, I mean, it sounds crazy now, doesn't it? But you, yeah, 3 channels, you know, BBC One, BBC Two, ITV. So, you know, but you would see things about war, and, you know, the reporting was very different then. But I remember seeing, you know, children's faces and thinking, well, that could be me. I could have been born where they're born, and I could be going through what they're going through. And it felt like quite a singular position. I didn't really know many people who also thought about that. And I was also somebody that grew up in an area in the southeast of England where there wasn't any cultural diversity at that point. I think, you know, it's only because my dad worked in the City of London and I would go up with him that we saw cultural diversity at all. Otherwise, we just wouldn't have been aware of it. And that fascinated me, that there was a whole world out there. It wasn't just what happened in the box of a house that I lived in with loving parents that, you know, wanted the best education for their children. There was just this whole world out there somewhere. And I knew that I wanted to travel from really quite a young age. And again, that brings me to another aspect of the project as well, is that actually I didn't have the confidence. I didn't know if I would actually be able to travel, because I didn't know how I could make that happen. There's that thing about being squished when you're in school that I refer to, that all of this lovely vitality and stuff is kind of, you know, you're put behind a desk and you need to learn this way because you'll learn better this way. I didn't realise really that to keep being the way that I wanted to be, I now needed confidence, because I was going to have to do something different in front of these people in order to get to where I wanted to be, and to be observed doing something different felt quite uncomfortable for me. So I just think that the global aspect has come from that very acute awareness that we are all the same. You know, we could all have been born in any war-torn area, in any area where there is poverty and starvation. Any one of us could have been a family fleeing a bad situation. And as I say, I've always felt fortunate that for some reason been born in the UK into a supportive family that, you know, whereby there was always food on the table. And I think because we have social media now and other media, worldwide media, and we do have these hundreds of channels, young people's exposure to the rest of the world has increased at such a rapid rate. And of course, for most of them, it is all they've ever known. And they have these images beaming into, you know, their front rooms in their house, usually with their parents, you're choosing what news channel is on or whatever. And there's nothing they can do about that. They might be watching quite a distressed situation. And actually, all they really want to do is go and give these children a cuddle. They want to give them the teddy bear they don't bother with much anymore. They want to make sure that they've got clean clothes. You know, you might see a single child sitting there crying, and the first thing is, well, where's their mummy and daddy? You know, what's going on? The poorest child will always love another child in pain. It's that simple. So again, with the project, it's getting to that space where children everywhere can feel loved and supported and looked after, because children everywhere are aware of children everywhere. It's a very simple equation to me, that we all want the same thing for the children of the planet, to feel safe, secure and loved and have their base needs met. And so again, with the project, that's what we will be doing with the funds, because a lot of the money that we accrue through the membership is going to be redistributed on behalf of our members to the places that need it most, to support children all around the world, no matter what.
Amazing. Really amazing.
I think so. Yeah. Because I do, because I don't, nothing like this has ever been tried before, Jane. Has, you know, nothing, no. You know, some people look at me and go, oh my goodness, that's huge. And that's all they say, because it's never been done before. So we actually don't know what's going to happen. But we just have this amazing premise set up, and the way that the children feel about it, you know, before we've even opened the membership, is all about nurturance and care. You know, some of the first children I spoke to said, oh, it all sounds brilliant, but are you going to help my teachers? And you kind of look into the eyes of these kids and you're like, well, okay, tell me what your teachers need. And they will see beautiful people in their schools that they love and adore, as children often, you know, do. They get very fond of a lot of their teachers, and they see them struggling and they don't like it, you know, and then they might have actually heard on the news something that then shocks them, which is that their teachers are in a heat or eat situation. You know, this area of this, you know, awful line of what's described as poverty or not, and how much money you do or don't have in order to be classed as in the poverty area. But quite honestly, when there are people that have a good job but still need to choose between whether or not their children and themselves are eating, or whether they can put some heat on in the winter, and that is shocking to for anywhere around the world, absolutely anywhere, that there are choices to be made about our base needs. So when they ask about their teachers, what can we do? Then yes, absolutely. We do want to make sure that there is a provision within our project, which will be separate to the membership. The membership is for the 11 to 20s, but we will be offering support through another side of the site for parents, carers and teachers, because, you know, everybody needs looking after. It's that simple. And the children are already driving this. You know, they're the ones making the requests. To look after everybody and know that they need nurturance and a safe space to go. And you need to look after the people that look after, don't you? It's simple. It's simple, isn't it? It's not rocket science. It really isn't.
No, you're right. It's not rocket science. And of course, I spent 20 years in the classroom teaching English to 11 to 18 year olds, and loved it. And one of the reasons, in spite of how stressful it was, especially in the last sort of 3 or 4 years before I left, it became just, you know, awful because of targets and trying to fit all children into a red hole. And it's not, you know, you couldn't teach the individual anymore. You used to be able to always teach the individual and bring them out their talents and do whatever you wanted to do, because that's what teachers did.
Yeah,
they were people who were able to bring out a child's talent to allow them to achieve their potential. And that teachers have become squashed as well.
Yes, of course.
And I remember when I left, because I had to leave, and that's, I was obviously doing my nutrition and all my foodie sort of work alongside for that whole 20 years, really. I didn't want to leave my kids. I love my students. I just love working with children. But it became so bad. I thought, I've got to leave, or I'm going to be ill again. The stress is going to make me ill again, regardless of what I'm doing. But this one boy sent me a message on Facebook, and I'm obviously always very careful. I was never sort of friends with any of my students, anything like that. till they'd left and they came and met me in town and bumped into me and they had three kids of their own. Maybe I'd think about it then. Because I've got some boundaries, professional boundaries. But this boy said, Miss, and said, Miss, why did you have to leave? You know, you were helping, you would help me so much with my English. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I don't know if I'll pass my exams. And I just felt awful. Oh. Because they become very close to their teachers because they know the teachers are invested in their progress and they can see the teachers struggling with all these other imposed limits which come from above. And teachers get a very bad rap, but honestly, you know, it is a vocation when you're a teacher and you want to work with children.
Yeah.
But yeah, these government systems, it's very interesting where they have the they have those lists, and I think I put an article up, didn't I, recently about, is it Sweden, who were the happiest?
They didn't
measure happiness, but in the leagues, it was about the Swedes, and they didn't start to seven or eight, and they didn't have this, and didn't have that. But happiness is not measured, is it, as an index of success
in any way.
And you think, emotional intelligence, but how, you know, we end up. So I was going to ask you, what do you think is the three biggest barriers to health are for our young people? Thinking about what does health, do you think, mean for you, for a young person? Obviously, we're talking mental health as well, but are there lots of different aspects?
I think, I do. I think that what you're talking about there is a disenfranchisement, you know, that lovely long word that means a separation from. And I think that the lack of nurturance and understanding for personal identity and personal responsibility has been eroded. You know, the lack hasn't been eroded, but, you know, there is a lack. And that personal responsibility thing gets eroded through the systems that we have in place, through media beaming into your house and you seeing war-torn areas and you can't do anything about it. I think that that's very stressful for young people, that it's not supported, that they have feelings about all of those things going on, and actually they don't feel that they're allowed to say it, or they don't feel that there's a space to say it, or they don't feel that what they say carries any validity for anybody else. You know, maybe they've spoken up in a situation and been dismissed, or maybe because they're a young person they don't feel heard at all, because certainly in the UK we do have that culture of you only really hear about young people on the news because they've done something terrible, and my heart bleeds, because straight away I'm thinking, how has that been allowed to happen? How has a 14-year-old, you know, got to the stage where they've hurt somebody else? Why are people looking at, you know, locking them up and throwing away the key, and they're not looking at the fact that maybe that child has bounced in and out of care since they were 2-year-old, and what else has been going on so that they don't feel they've got any kind of choice in life, and they're sort of, you know, children can be, that's an extreme end of the spectrum obviously, but we, you know, a lot of us can feel like we're floating around without an identity. So I think that's a really big thing for me, that the nurturance and understanding for personal identity. I think that the lack of engaging with nature that we've been seeing a rise of, and some of that is to do with handheld devices and how children have a preference of learning now. Like I say before, you know, a lot of them, that's all they've ever known is these lovely little, you know, tablets and whatever, and mobile phones, of course, which again, when you and I were that age, were not a big thing at all. We weren't even thought of. And the first mobile phones were like the size of a house brick, weren't they? And so, you know, for children that have grown up with that as their norm, there is a lack of engagement with the natural world. And within that is the poor nutrition that comes from not understanding that you grow food. You know, whether you are, you know, sort of a meat eater that doesn't know what a cow is and what has to happen to that cow in its lifetime for it to become a beef burger for you, or whether you, you know, sort of a plant-based person and don't really understand how carrots grow, or whatever else it might be, as a young person, that there isn't that, again, that ownership over what you put in your body. There isn't an engagement with your physical world in that way. So I think that's a big stressing point. And then with that is the lack of support for individual positive health and well-being. It seems to be potluck in the UK, certainly. If your family might live in an area where the health service can cope with the demands for mental health that your family might now need, the facilities don't seem to be widespread, and the care that your young people in your family would benefit from is not available. And it does seem to be a picture that I'm aware of on a worldwide basis. Obviously, many countries don't have a free healthcare system. Of course, we know ours isn't free because we pay for it in our taxes. But, you know, that thing of it being available to everybody. And certainly children's services globally appear to be poorly funded by governments. And it's something we repeatedly see with so much charity work going on. You know, why are the charities doing what they're doing if it's all right otherwise? So I think it's very clear to us that you do have that, you know, lack of understanding for the identity. You can get lost in that, the lack of engagement with nature and the natural world, and the lack of support for that re-emergence of the self to come through and feel positive, which is why it is something, as you know, on the projects and you know, while I've pulled you along, is kicking and screaming that with you know, if we can teach good basic nutrition so that it's in our nature to know what is healthy to eat and then make choices without feeling like it's a big decision or that we have to struggle with it. Like, you don't want to force children to eat things they don't want. You don't want to start fighting over you should have 5 pieces of vegetables a day or 5, 7 portions, whatever it is. We don't want to be having to hide broccoli in pasta sauce and pizzas. You know, you don't want to be doing that. If we can, you know, reach children and their parents by supporting them, not being critical, showing the value of foods in ways that they can readily appreciate and afford, and then they'll choose to eat them. You know, if we, you know, this thing I've got about, you know, sort of showing children in ways they can understand that food is fuel and what happens on a cellular level to optimize their physical and mental well-being, that the brain needs certain bits of food to be good. You know, parts of the body, muscles need certain elements from food to feel good. So if we re-engage with nature and, you know, where the food actually comes from, and then what happens to us when we ingest it, I think it becomes less about making lifestyle changes and more about natural choice, because young people will want to feel the best they can possibly feel. And maybe at the minute there is a disconnect, you know, between, you know, their understanding of what they put in and then how they feel. So, you know, and on the project, we want to be promoting the fun stuff, like you say about, you know, doing it on a family thing as well and all cooking together or thinking, you know, there's lovely things you can do. There's, you know, planning picnics in good weather with very, you know, basic ingredients. You don't have to have lots of money to come up with really simple, healthy things that you can eat outdoors and exploit. So that we are re-engaged, you know, on all of those different things, we can re-engage with them like in one big hit. And I just think it, you know, that kind of engagement knocks down the barriers to the barriers that currently are there that would reduce stress naturally. It's a natural knock-on effect, isn't it, to just be totally engaged with your physical presence, how you feel, and, oh, by the way, yes, I'm feeling hungry right now, I do need fuel to keep going. Wouldn't it be better to eat something that I absolutely know 100% is going to help me to feel good than filling myself because, you know, maybe I've got other needs going on, or, you know, all those things we understand about difficulties with food as well and food behaviours. So I think we've got an opportunity with the project to ask young people how they are feeling about their food as well, and turn it into something really special where they're providing their own education about changing that around.
Absolutely. And of course, when it comes to some of the live streaming, with live streaming some smoothie demos or something like that, the possibilities are endless for communicating with children all over the world, to teach them, give them that knowledge in very fun live ways.
Definitely. I think fun is the key, isn't it? Yeah. We've got to have fun. We all want to have fun. We all want, you know, I remember starting the project and thinking, oh, I want to put fun back in education. And then I thought, was it ever there? Let's seriously look at, was it ever really there? And it is there when, like you say, you have the inspired teachers of the people that are in this area for the right reasons. And when you let children play with their parents and parents be in charge of what happens to their children, families play together beautifully. And where that isn't the case, where there isn't a supportive family, if we still foster play and fun, it's amazing what can happen. That some of the children that I've worked with in the past who have been in those, you know, very sort of poverty-stricken areas, you sort of take them away from that and engage them in something else. They're not sort of looking down at their feet all the time, even for half an hour, and they become somebody else. There is that thing that is, you know, sort of more heart-centered for them, where almost maybe they remember what it's like to be a natural animal and explore and invent things, and they re-engage with that want for themselves to find out what life is here for, instead of being told by external forces you can only have such and such and limiting them in that way. I think the fun thing's key. I feel like I want us to get together in a kitchen and bake muffins and you know, sort of,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Just that, have that lovely thing of just engaging with the plate. Because I, you know, I used to be one of, I was lucky. My mum used to sit me up on the kitchen counter and I'd be able to put my finger in the cake mix, you know, before it went in the washing up and things like that. And I, you know, I think a lot of that, it's too fast paced, isn't it, life? We don't give that time. You know, I used to love cookery lessons at school because when mum was at work, you know, that wasn't going on at home anymore. But I used to do it in school and then I'd go home and I'd do it all over again. You know, I'd learn to bake. And I think that I was naturally curious about making things taste good. So I'm sure we can do that, yeah, can't we?
Oh, God. Well, you know, I can just see it with having a sort of, because I'm playing with the live streaming now, because, of course, apart from the radio shows, we're now going to have the TV network as well, mm-hmm, running labs on every other between the shows. So,
oh gosh,
Michael,
right,
our esteemed producer, is very keen for me to be doing some live demos and so on. So I mean, I could see a situation where you have basically a live interactive class worldwide where you're teaching children how to cook, and they're tapping into the chat box, their questions and their results,
yes,
they're posting pictures in their group of what they've come up with. That's what I would love to see happen, is to be, to, if, yeah, I could interactively teach children about health and cooking, I would just be absolutely over the moon, because I think as well, it makes it fun. They could be making friends. You could have a group. They're making, I mean, I think the possibilities here are endless, Jenny, and this is what's so wonderful about it. But, and it's good that you're reaching out to parents and teachers as well, because there are many teachers, again, who are leaving the profession in droves. They've been completely squashed. And as a teacher, mm-hmm, when you have a child who doesn't get something and you inspire them to get it and they enjoy it, it is one of the most defining moments that you're ever going to have. And when I can still remember moments where kids have said things to me and it's like, oh, miss, I get that. And how you can get a bottom set class of boys to actually love Shakespeare. You've got it, but you're,
yeah,
sort of like, whoa, my word, oh, I love that. But there are ways to make education and learning fun, but it's all about confidence, I think. Do you think confidence is a big issue with children?
I do, in that, like I say, I think from very early on, as soon as you are starting school and you're sort of now systemized, rather than sort of like the kindergarten playgroup sort of age group, but as soon as you start in your infant school, and in the UK it's 4 or 5 years old, that you are sat in a classroom, a square classroom, behind a square desk, getting a little square chair, and that you are told that's the optimal way to learn, you know, pay attention, look up at the board, and all those kind of things. And and I know it's a lot more interactive now than it used to, you know, it's a lot more free flowing going on. But yeah, I do think that the natural way for a child to be is to explore. I think it's really that simple. And when you talk about the live streaming, I think that's something that they could explore, because it makes them want to go do that. You know, it makes them want to be on show. It gives the confidence thing needs to come from an external reference point. If it's been squished out from an external reference point, we can all be blessed with solid self-esteem. You're born into the world and you're here because you were born. But then the layers come on top from, you know, whatever, whether it's your family situation you're born into, or just the social conditioning, how your school years treat you. Confidence is something that then needs to be learned. It's something that is, it's when we're on display in front of people, we need it. And I do feel that, again, with the project, it offers things, because we have an area where children will be sending in their self-expression. We've got a graffiti wall where they literally, I mean, it's going to cover all of anything creative. So it's not just about, you know, sort of like doing something that might look literally like graffiti. It could be a poem they've written. They could, you know, write a song and send us in, you know, sort of an MP3. There's all those things. And because we're going to have that, and we've got a YouTube channel, and that can be seen globally around the world as well, we also know that the confidence that young people can have across the planet, that there are other people that have got your back. You know, we know that you're starving and we're really trying to do something about it, because we're generating some money here that can help you. They see that, you know, they might have 20 minutes a week when they've got access to the internet. If they just happened across one of our videos that some people, young people in the group, you know, showing that these are things they can do, if it's watching you make some interesting food and they've never seen food like that before or something. And with that is because they know that it's all being done like in a way of this global ownership and us all looking after each other better, including you. That's a really wonderful thing to happen. I think the confidence in children grows in between themselves. They like to be able to give, you know, like an energetic hug to each other. They like to know that there's somebody else thinking about them. So yeah, confidence is a massive key. It can get squished out. And of course, we've got a lot of parents around that had their confidence squished out, so they don't know how to give it to their children. So it's, you know, those self-fulfilling circles of things not being quite in balance are things that we can redress, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So we're heading towards the end of the show. We've still got a bit of time left for a couple more questions, but why don't you tell people how to get in touch with you, where the website is, the Facebook page, if people want to donate to the project, or if any young people thinking, I want to join, what's going on with the actual site itself?
So currently we've had phase one launched, which is there is now a site up, which is whatisandwhyisthat.com. And because we are going interactive with the members, it's going to be run for the members by the members, that you can send in, there's buttons on the landing page that link to all sorts of other areas on the site. But we want you to write into us and tell us what you want to see. We want you to ask us questions so that we know what to populate the content of the site with. So it's very easy to get hold of us. You can either email us. There's several email addresses on there. There's info at what is and why is that. And there's the ask us and tell us at what is and why is that. And so they're different areas, because sometimes you do want to ask a question. Sometimes you want to tell us, this is what I want. So that's how you can take part at the moment. The membership is really exciting, because I'm talking about ownership and global ownership. And because we are creating a fund through the subscription money that comes in, the members get to choose what happens to that money. So the first thing we're going to do is teach children how to create their own subscription fees. It works out at 50 pence a day. But we are going to open for the first 6 months at a lesser rate, because we want to encourage people in to take part and help us grow the project and tell us what you want. So in that co-creation phase of the first 6 months, it's all going to continue to co-create. But in that first 6 months, we're offering membership at just £10 a month. So it's somewhere between, you know, 30 and 40p a day. It's much, much lower. And we want to show children how to create their own personal financial situation, so that they don't feel dependent on adults in their family to give them pocket money or to have an allowance, or to think that they've got to wait until they've left school and can get a job. It's actually, in the UK, 50 pence doesn't buy you an awful lot of money. It may well be the equivalent to a dollar in the States and maybe a dollar in Australia at the minute. I'm not completely sure of the exchange rates. And we want to make it even and fair across the world as well. So, for example, in the UK, what £10 might buy for your monthly membership could be a week's rent in somewhere like India, perhaps. So we want to make sure that we get information about how that works as well, because obviously we were not going to be asking for anything unfair. The input is the same. But we're going to teach children how they can create their own personal finances. So, for example, if the daily membership is 50 pence a day, for which they have access to this absolute wealth of information, like you say, these amazing experts from all over the place on, you know, everything that you can name, with more coming all the time. They have access to that, and they also have this ownership over what happens around the planet, because we will redistribute the bulk of the funding to good causes and organisations that support these needs all around the world, so that all children get an education and a roof over their head and a decent amount of food. That's what we're going to be doing with that fund. So, you know, come on board and tell us how you want to do it. Let us know your ideas for making your 50 pence a day. You know, let us know what you think we can do for the children that definitely they're not going to be able to afford it. But we still want to help them learn and grow. So they need to come into the project anyway, so that we can show them how to create their personal finances. We've got a wonderful expert with numbers, and I don't like to use the word maths around children, because it can put the fear of God into some children, can't it? But
yeah.
She's a wonderful expert in personal finances, and she and I are co-creating a program for personal funding and budgeting, because, you know, to me, it's kind of, it doesn't matter if you can't do quadratic equations or algebra or whatever. It matters to me if you don't know how to support yourself and know how much money you need to spend on rent or food or whatever. So we're teaching that right from the get-go, from, you know, 11 years upwards. That's what we're teaching and promoting. So, you know, get on board and tell us, you know, go to whatismwiseat.com, look for those buttons, send in your questions, queries and instructions to us, and we will do our best to fulfill it. And then, you know, as we are growing, content is being written and uploaded onto new pages all of the time. And at the point where we think, right, okay, we've got enough to start solving some of the questions, we will make it live and go public. And hopefully that's, you know, only going to be, you know, within the next couple of months for sure. So we, you know, you're joining us at a brilliant time. If you climb on board now and start pumping us with your questions and demands, then you really are at that forefront of co-creation and telling us how it needs to work and letting us know who to approach to give bursary membership to as well, so that there are children that, you know, are yet unable to, you know, afford to pay £10 a month for the first 6 months, but you can tell us how do we actually approach them and how do we get them on board, so that they are also putting in and telling us what needs to happen around the world and what needs to change.
Amazing. Changing the world.
I get quite
Absolutely.
Excited about that, don't I? I know.
Yes, you do. It's great. And so you should. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And I don't think even you have the slightest inkling of how huge this is going to be in terms of really impacting on young people's well-being and their lives. And it's really, really exciting. Really,
yeah,
really
exciting. Yeah, I kind of hope I don't know, because I think it's more exciting that way. I, you know, I can't wait to find out what's going to happen next. Do you know that? I know, we know we've sowed the seeds. We know we're answering a calling, don't we? You know, you and I, and all the people, we know that has been pulled out of us for years.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And we can do this. We've got this. You know, we hear you, young people of the world. We are hearing you, and we are here to serve you the best way we can, support your needs. And let's just do it.
Let's just do it. Just do it. That's what we need.
Oh, careful. Yes, that's somebody else's,
fantastic.
I think.
Well, listen, Jenny, it has been an absolutely amazing 45 minutes talking to you. I can't wait to have you back in a little while just to tell us how things are going and to talk about the issues a bit more, because the issues are, you know, not easily covered in one show by any stretch of the imagination. Uh-huh. We haven't even scratched the surface on many things to do with health and well-being, but it's been absolutely amazing to hear about the site and everything that went behind it. And remind us once again of the email address, or the email address and the website
email.
Address and the Facebook page.
Oh, Facebook, of course. Yeah, Facebook is, we've got a community page for What Is and Why Is That. So if you go, that's all you need to put in, What Is and Why Is That, a community group. And we have information on there that explains a lot about the project. And obviously you can contact us through that if you're on Facebook. So you can like the page and send us your own information and ideas. The website is whatisandwhyisthat.com. And as soon as you hit that landing page, you can just, you know, have a look all over the page, and there are buttons. Everything is a button. Everything that moves is a button, and it will take you to another area of the site that will give you more information about what the project is. And included in that is ask us at what is and why is that, and tell us at what is and why is that. There's also launch at what is and why is that, if you want to be kept updated and be sent emails around what's happening about when we open the membership. But primarily, you know, we're really concerned to get your input and have you contact us on the ask us or tell us at what is and why is that.com.
And that is worldwide.
It is worldwide. Yeah, we're .com and
yeah.
We're open. So yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And certainly any information about, you know, how the sort of the correlation for the pricing works as well, so that we can get to everybody. And it's the equivalent of the UK 50p a day everywhere. We'd love to hear about that.
Yes, I tend to think that we're normally, would £10 be about $15, something like that? And I
it's
think
kind of, yeah.
Australia is twice. But
it's about
two thirds or something like that. Anyway,
and I have a researcher working on that.
Yeah.
We do have a researcher. I'm not kind of like, you know, picking around. Oh, I haven't got a clue. It's just I don't have the figures in front of me. But we, you know, we want information from other people as well, what they think is fair, because again, you know, it's by the members for the members. So we want to know, you know, what it should be all around the world, really.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here and taking an hour out of your incredibly busy launch time. I know you are prodigiously hard worker.
Uh-huh.
And Jenny, you and I know that we'll be talking soon, but we'll look forward to having you back again very soon.
Well,
so thank you.
Thank you
very
for
much.
The invitation. Thank you so much for giving us this space to stick it all out there and you know, really looking forward to hearing from people. So thank you very, very much.
And we'll be hearing from you again. Thank you, Jenny.
Bye for now. Thank you.
See you. Bye. And there we have the amazing Jenny Marshall with What Is and Why Is That, which is an amazing membership site, which I think is going to change the world, not just for young people, but for parents and for teachers too. I think it's an incredible project. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it unfolds. So having talked there a little bit about children's health and about their well-being, I say children, we're talking 11 to 20, but really we're talking all children when it comes to tips for getting them to try and make healthier choices, to take charge of their health, take control of their own health and understand why maybe they should be making those kind of choices. There's one meal which I think is really, really the bugbear of many a parent, and that is breakfast. Breakfast is the choices of, oh, look, I'm just going to not bother, or I'm going to grab some really sugary cereal, or, you know, I'm going to have waffles or whatever it is smothered in sort of sugar. The recipe I'm going to give you today is one of my standby favorites, and it's not just good for breakfast. It's actually, you know, if you make this in a big dish, because the recipe itself is quite a big recipe to make a good sort of dozen portions or so, depending on how big your portions are, that is a breakfast frittata. Now, frittatas are great because, of course, you're getting the eggs in there, which are very nutritious, excellent for the brain, excellent for concentration. The best breakfast choice that you can make, actually, in terms of energy release through the morning and keeping your blood sugar steady so you don't reach for chocolate bars at about 11 o'clock. The recipe is one of the free 12 or so recipes that's on the Functional Foodie Hub section under recipes, and that's functional-foodie.com. And you can chuck anything in it, really. You know, it's based around things like you can have sausage meat in there, sweet potatoes, spinach, a bit of onion, lots of eggs, and creating a sort of one dish meal, which can be, have a slab for breakfast, but then you can always pack some up and use it for lunch as well with some salad. So it's very, very versatile. All you have to do is preheat your oven and get quite a big, perhaps a glass baking dish is the best choice. And you can grease that with coconut oil or butter or rapeseed oil. And dice up your sweet potatoes quite small. If you want to sort of par cook them ahead, then do, because, you know, if you want to make sure that they're soft, because potatoes, like many things, it depends on the potato how quickly it cooks through. You judge whether it's a particularly hard sweet potato or a softer one. Chop up your spinach. You can chop up your onion. And then you heat a large frying pan. Put in the sausage meat if you're going to use it, or you can use bacon. And that's browned and caramelized. Take it out. Try and remove the fat if you've cooked sausage or bacon first. And then put a little rapeseed oil in the pan and perhaps add your diced sweet potatoes. Perhaps 10 to 15 minutes, they're quite tender. Take them out, put in the spinach, and also any other veg you want to add, because this is a very basic recipe and you can add whatever vegetables you like to this. You can put in peppers, you can put in carrots, you can put in anything that you like. Mix everything up together, put the mixture of vegetables, whatever you're using, into the bottom of the dish, and then whisk your eggs, put a little dash of milk or maybe cream if you want to sort of make it richer, but you don't need to, bit of seasoning. Pour the egg mix over the veggies and then you just stick it in the oven for 20 to 30 minutes, depending on the heat of your oven. You want to go about 180, probably something like that. And then just wait and see if you like a really firm frittata or you like a little bit of a bit of wobble there in the middle. Do it exactly to your liking. That's it, buys and serve. So you can make this the day before and then just heat slices through for breakfast or eat them cold. Take them to work. It's absolutely fantastic. So there is a wonderful recipe there for breakfast. Kids will love to help make it. They will love eating it as well. It's delicious. And it will give them something very nutritious to start the day and hopefully wean them off the sugary cereal. So I hope you've enjoyed today's show. It's been a total child fest. Hopefully it's been very enlightening for you. And until I see you again in a couple of weeks. Wishing you happiness and health.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.